This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi! This is Patsy with a... Patsy with a Z, my goodness. Patsy with a Z. I almost said Zed because I've been thinking a lot about England and about my years there. It's I received a wonderful gift from somebody from England, a hamper from Fortnum and Mason. And I was nibbling on one of the biscuits because it's so funny. When I got this basket, it is a special one because it is the King Charles III coronation basket. So it's very, very special. And I was thinking about how when I got to England and I would say Patsy with a Z, they'd all say, what's Z? it's funny. But I am waiting for a call in from my guest, and I've been waiting to talk to her because this is a fascinating book. It's called The Butcher, The Embezzler, and The Fall Guy, a family memoir of scandal and greed in the meat industry. And it is written by Gretchen Charrington. She was a guest here before, and I remember when she was on, she was talking then about a book that she wrote about her father, a book about him because he was a great poet. And it was a very wonderfully done memoir. And I said to her at the time, I said, Gretchen, I know once you've written this, you won't be able to stop. You'll continue writing. And sure enough, she then found another family member to write a book about, and that's her grandfather. So I'm hoping she's calling in any minute. But meanwhile, I want to say also at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to have a wonderful guest. And she wrote a book that I think is delightful. It's called 100 Days Till Tomorrow. And Ellis Case, it's just sometimes you get these debut books and you just wonder how did they go so long without writing a great book? Because, sometimes it's in you. It's in you. You know you have a book in you. And you put it off and you put it off. And maybe it needs that those years to sort of get in your bones. But certainly L.S. Case, this book is delightful. And the premise is so interesting because I got such a kick out of it. It's about somebody who inherits a house under the condition that she actually lives in the house for 100 days. And I thought that was such a clever idea. And it turns out the book is delightful, so I'm looking forward to talking to her. And I don't know where Gretchen is, but we will do a few other things today. I think let's play a Jim Lamb. I've been talking a lot about the people who started writing after listening to Joy on Paper over the years. You know, we're now in the ninth year. I've had so many fascinating guests on, and one of them, of course, is Gretchen, who wrote this book called The Butcher, The Embezzler, and The Fall Guy. These are people who have books in them. They have interesting family members, and at some point they made that decision to sit down and write. And that's what happened with some of the authors who participated in NaNoWriMo back in November. Five of the listeners who have contacted me, who finished, they have now, they're working on editing their books. They wrote 50, NaNoWriMo is really a wonderful group because they encourage you to write, and the whole premise behind it is that if you can sit down and really concentrate for 1 month and come out with 50,000 word book, you should be proud of yourself, and that's what people do. And of course, I entered it a few years ago because my goddaughter, Kenesha, had done it quite a few times, and she always finished. And it's not easy to write 50,000 words. You have to be. It shows a discipline, and she had done it, so she challenged me. Now November is not a good month for me because I've always been a big Thanksgiving person, always the one who does the turkey and has the people over, And so it's a busy month for me. But I said, what the heck? I want to, make Kanisha proud of me. So I did it. And I actually had only 24 days, sort of, because I had to get ready for Thanksgiving. I had tons of people that year. And I did it. And so in 25 days, I wrote 50,000 words. And so I was a winner. You know, you don't win a prize, a big prize. You win a certificate. But mostly what you get is the pride of knowing that you're able to sort of knuckle down, concentrate yourself, and do it. And now the five listeners who did it back in November, they've been asking me questions. How do I improve my writing? What should I do? So here's a little literary a literary gem from Jim Lamb. And it's one of many that he's taped for us. And I hope you'll enjoy this one. And we can go have more soon.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. That, my friend, is the way to open a novel. I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. Who knows what Charles Dickens was thinking when he penned his famous and memorable opening to A Tale of Two Cities. Whatever it was, he was right on. The only opening line more famous, and even older, is from the Torah. Barashit bara Elohim et hashamayim ve'et ha'eres. What does it mean? I'll give you a hint. In the beginning, God created. Well-crafted openings grab readers' attention and set up a great story. Let's take Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, for example. It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. If you're familiar with Austen's book, you know what a perfect setup that is. How about Anna Karenina by Leo Tolstoy? Happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. That, my friends, is a riddle wrapped up in an enigma with a side order of fries. French fries. One of my favorite books is George Orwell's 1984, so it must have a great opener. You bet your big brother's life it does. It was a bright, cold day in April, and the clocks were striking 13. Wait a minute. 12 is the highest number a clock can strike. Or is it? The Stranger by Albert Camus has a short and not very sweet opening. Here it is. Mother died today. Kind of odd, yet suitable in every way. And of course I gotta bring up Hemingway's Old Man and the Sea. I always do. He was a man who fished alone in a skiff in the Gulf Stream, and he had gone 84 days now without taking a fish. If you can find a better opening to a book written by a Nobel Prize winning author, let me know. I'm Jim Lamb, and you've just learned a little something-something about opening lines.
That was a great one. That's actually perfect because, I was thinking a lot about England and about Jane Austen. And one of the reasons, the main reason why I decided when I was 11 years old to move to England was because of Jane Austen. And wow, when I got this gift last week of the hamper from Fortnum & Mason, I was so thrilled because one of the first things I purchased when I went to England, as soon as I had a car, was I bought a hamper from Fortnum & Mason, which we always kept in, as I still call it, the boot in the trunk. And we always had that in the trunk because we traveled all around England, all the back roads of England. They have wonderful highways there. But I loved just to take the back roads, travel slowly, stop wherever we wanted, often in a pub. But in those days, the pubs were not open. in the middle of the afternoon. The pubs were closed, and you had to wait until they opened before you could go in and have a drink. So we would always have a picnic. We would have our Fortnum and Mason hamper, and we would stop somewhere along the way, and there was always someplace wonderful to stop. For me, of course, mostly I would always find the historical places, whether it was the about authors or perhaps the royalty, but also my husband was always interested in stopping at any place where there was where there might be aircraft, and so we did a lot of the RAF bases. We often stopped there, and that was a great place always to have a picnic, because many of the RAF bases in those days, some of the pilots were still alive, and if the bases had been turned into private fields, we would get to meet them. Because we actually had our plane at an old RAF base, and it was White Waltham, a really lovely grass. You know, people don't realize that many of the bases in England during World War II were grass. They took off from grass. And so we had our plane there, which was absolutely a delight, because wherever there are Englishmen who get together, there's sure to be a pub. So there was the Pilots Club there, and I didn't always go up with my husband. He would often go up with other people, but I would sit in the club and meet RAF pilots, and I learned a great deal about World War II because of them, and so it was fascinating. But I've been thinking a lot about Jane Austen, and even more perhaps about Jane Eyre, because it's funny, I went to England because of Jane Austen, but I really fell in love with Jane Eyre. She was the one who, I think, influenced me the most, and I am still in awe of that book, and if you haven't read it, you should read it. Not the movies, please, and don't watch these Wuthering Heights movies. They absolutely do not capture the book. I can't stand it. And if they make one more Pride and Prejudice, I really will go crazy, because that's not... I get so upset about it. Especially, I think probably Wuthering Heights is the worst one that anyone tries to make and remake and overmake. And there are just some books that don't translate well to the screen, and I think that's one of them. But again, I don't know what happened to my guest, and I am sorry. You know, you plan and plan and plan, and she's not here. But what I wanted to do anyway, I think first let's play a very special thing that Big Ed taped, and it is a Father's Day promo for National Geographic books. As you know, I love National Geographic books, and they make great gifts because, you know, it's, as you'll hear in this promo that Ed did, I think I've captured the essence of it. So, and Ed has this fabulous voice. So, Ed, do you want to play that?
Father's Day is a National Geographic day here at Joy on Paper. Not a lot of dads wear ties anymore. A t-shirt that says, World's Greatest Dad is cool, but give your dad a gift that keeps on giving. A book from National Geographic is always perfect. There is a Nat Geo book for every subject under the sun. Wild animals? He'll love Carlton Ward's Path of the Panther that offers new hope for Florida's endangered panther. How about ancestors? Any Irish in your family? Then you must get Jack Kavanaugh's Always Ireland. It's heading into summer, the perfect time to go camping. Your dad will love 50 states, 5,000 ideas. Where to go? When to go? What to see? What to do is a book that showcases the best travel experiences in every state. From the obvious to the unexpected, it will keep dad turning the pages for hours. And then he'll want to grab that fishing pole and start traveling across America. National Geographic books are always treasured. Beautifully written and richly illustrated books from the world's greatest photographers. Give a gift of love. Give a gift that lasts. Go to National Geographic Books website and get inspired.
We'll get inspired, all right, especially with that promo. Ed, you did a beautiful job. Absolutely terrific. Just, he captured the essence of it, because I get so excited about Nat Geo books, and I want to mention particularly Jack Kavanaugh's book about Ireland, Always Ireland, and it is such a beautiful book. You will just love it. It is just a book where you can spend hours and hours looking at the wonderful photography of the Nat Geo photographers, but also the stories that Jack writes about all the little places in Ireland, all the places that you, as you're going around Ireland, you might stop and you might, you know, just have a lovely afternoon doing nothing. You can do nothing in Ireland and have a great time. It's so wonderful. Again, we didn't take our car over to Ireland, so we would have to rent a car there, and we'd rent these little cars usually, and just sometimes just drive. We never looked at a map. We knew that we'd land up somewhere fun, and wherever you land up, you meet Irish people who are always willing to talk, and they're always willing to ask if you know. If you know Uncle Patrick from Cincinnati or wherever, they all have relatives all over the place, and so they were always interested in knowing, you know, where you came from and if you knew any Irish people. A wonderful, wonderful book. As a matter of fact, that is, I think it has to be one of my very favorite interviews, and it is on my homepage of my website. It's www.radio-joyonpaper. And I put Jack's interview there on the homepage. One, because I love his accent. I love talking to Irish people. I there's something really so magical about their voices. It's maybe a little bit, a wee bit of magic in their voices, which it's funny in, you know, people will always find French accents interesting or sexy, but the Irish, they beat them, absolutely. And I hope that maybe you'll go to that, my homepage there, and listen to that interview, because it is a great interview. He is absolutely delightful. And also, Carlton Ward, who was here, and he talked about the Panthers and his book, Path of the Panthers. They've turned it into, there's a streaming video on Hulu and the Disney Channel, and you can see that. And this is a fascinating story about the Panthers. I was not aware until I got his book, and this is, again, another Nat Geo book, and it's just filled with these photographs. I had no idea how many hours it took, to hours of camera time, to capture all of these photographs that he's gotten of the panther. And I didn't realize that, you really don't hear a lot about panthers. And I was very touched by how he is so enthusiastic about making sure that they are preserved and that there's some of their habitat is preserved, so that we can continue to have these beautiful animals here in South Florida. And you'll love this book too. So all of these Nat Geo books are books that fathers will love, people will love, to sit down for hours and read them. So please, as I said, when you think of Father's Day, do think of getting a Nat Geo book. Along, you know, if you want to get the t-shirt and the tie, but we always got my father socks, because his feet were always in pain because of D-Day, which we just had the other day. And I still have tears in my eyes when I think of what he went through. Hold on, who's on? Gretchen.
I was told by the publicist that you were calling me, and then I just found out from her that was a mistake.
Yes.
I supremely apologize. I don't know if there's a way to reschedule or whatever, but I just wanted to, she told me to call you. So.
Well, I am glad you called, because at least I get a few minutes with you. I will reschedule you, Gretchen, because...
Okay.
Let's take 5 minutes and talk. I absolutely love this book. Now, remember,
oh, thank you.
Remember when you were on before, and I said to you, I said, you have another book in you because your writing is so good, and I was right.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And if anything, I mean, this book, it is so good. It is so, I was like, I was enthralled with it. I know it's a memoir.
Yep.
But oh, boy, Gretchen, Gretchen, just give us just a real quick overview of what this book is about. The title. You say the title because it's a big title.
Yes. The Butcher, the Embezzler, and the Fall Guy, a family memoir of scandal and greed in the meat industry. And it's about three powerful men who work together in Austin, Minnesota to begin what is now the multi-billion-dollar conglomerate Hormel Foods. The one, the Fall Guy in the title is my paternal grandfather. That's why I know about this story. And obviously the butcher is George Hormel, and the embezzler is a young man named Ransom Thompson. How's that for a name for an embezzler?
Perfect. Everything about this book is perfect.
So, well, thank you so much. Are we live right now?
Yeah, we're live, so you can we can talk. I'll keep you until the next guest calls because I've been looking forward to talking to you. Everything about it. You have this way of writing and taking us there. I mean, I was there in the office when your grandfather got.
I hoped you would be. Yes.
I was there. I was fuming. I mean,
oh, that's great.
It's funny. His first name was Alpha, and I was feeling very Alpha when I was reading that. Tell us about how he got fired, because we have to hear that story.
Yeah. So, well, he did get kind of caught up into this embezzlement, which took place over the course of about a decade. And the question was he complicit in the embezzlement? Because he obviously knew Ransom Thompson, as did George Hormel. Ransom Thompson was the comptroller of the company at the time. Anyway, long story short, my grandfather was forced to resign. And it's questionable whether that was purely because George Hormel, as many CEOs do in situations like this, sort of clean house, in quotes. But there were rumors floating around that he might have been in cahoots with the embezzler. And my family mythology was that, of course, that was not correct. But as a consultant working with a lot of CEOs and inside a lot of companies for several decades, I knew who CEOs were, how they made decisions, how they ticked. And I became extremely curious to find out what I thought really happened. So that was the genesis of me getting into this book.
Oh, boy, if they had cable news back then, would this have been a story, huh?
That's true. And you're the first one to mention that. That's great. Certainly would have been. It was, I think there were 1,300 newspapers that picked it up. But, yeah, if it was cable news, even more.
It would have been terrific. I mean, you're very lucky. You have a lot of great skeletons in your closet.
Thank you. I don't think I'm going to find any more.
Well, you never know.
That's true.
You're great at this research with source material, which is one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about. Because
I'd love to.
The book itself is brilliant. The story, it is like a mystery because we want to know what you're going to discover. So it's a page turner. I mean, not all memoirs are page turners, but
no, I this is sort of a hybrid. You know, I think I'm calling it a true crime investigative memoir.
I mean, it's really.
I don't think the cat is.
It's really thrilling. I love it. It's perfect for every thriller writer. It's perfect for everyone who's writing a memoir. So I'm going to, my other guest just called in. I'm going to skip all the commercials and everything and go to her. But what I want to do is tell you that I'm going to have you back, and we're going to talk lot about this wonderful book, and I'll do a promo for it anyway, you know, until I get you back on. I have to tell people to get this book. It's the title is long, but boy, oh boy,
it is.
The book seems too short because I'm reading it, I'm turning pages, I'm so excited about it. And so you're going to be back on.
Thank you so much, Patsy. I'm really sorry that there was a
That's all right. And you know, Gretchen, we're going to have you back on so that we can also discover how you do this beautiful research. You're the best.
I'd love to talk about that.
Source material, okay? So you'll be back on soon, okay?
Thanks very much. Take care. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Oh, I do love that book. It's absolutely wonderful. And we'll be having Gretchen back on the program, and we'll talk to her. But meanwhile, today, I am turning now to another author, and I don't know what to call her, actually. But I will say, the name of the book is 100 Days Till Tomorrow, and her name is L.S. Case, and I don't know what she wants me to call her. I was trying to think of what I should be calling her. I'm thinking of, like, I could just call her Brilliant. How about that? Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. So, L.S., what do you want me to call you? L.S.?
You know, you can call me Linda. How's that?
Okay.
That's my real name. You can call me Linda.
Oh, thank you for... I mean, I feel honored that I'm allowed to call you... I mean, I should be calling you something really, really special. As I said, Brilliant would be a nice name for you. Or Smarty Pants. I don't know. Because I tell you, I knew I would love this book when I always, you know within a few pages if I like a book or not. And then I get to the third page, and you use the word that I love and that very few people can use without blushing. You said, perchance. Perchance the misjudged receptionist would pull up a chair I love it. I said, any girl who can write perchance, my goodness, this is a terrific writer.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, I there's so many things. First of all, you're famous for something else, but now you're going to be a famous writer because this is a great book.
Oh, thank you.
And it's your first book.
It is. It's my debut novel.
I don't know. It's just so amazing when I get a debut novel that is like perfection. And as I said, it's very funny. I'm going to tell you something after we talk, but you tell us the premise of this book because I love the idea.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, 100 Days Till Tomorrow, it's a blend of inspirational women's fiction with Hallmark-style romance. My character, my main character, my protagonist, Miranda Blair, she has spent 2 decades avoiding the unknowns in her past and running from the truth. And rather than having aspirations, Miranda has all of these self-imposed limitations. She still lives with her mother in her modest childhood home, and everything in her life is understated. But then she discovers that she's the sole heir to her estranged grandmother's estate. But there's a catch. As a requirement for the inheritance, Miranda has to leap out of her comfort zone and spend 100 days in idyllic Cobbler's Hill at her grandmother's dilapidated, rustic New England cottage. And that's where everything changes. She not only meets the charming emerald eye guy next door, Jake Colby, but she also discovers herself. And Jake is determined to turn this resented countdown of 100 days into a season of endless possibilities. So it all sounds wonderful, and it is, until this magical summer adventure that she takes along the road not taken, then of course, there are new beginnings and second chances, but it also unearths all of these hidden secrets to her past.
Oh, you just combined everything so perfectly in this book. As I said, I just knew I was going to love it, and I did. I kept reading it, and there's so many things in it. But one of my favorite was, I love that there's a section where writing about balloons, and one of them is called Overjoyed.
Oh, yes.
You know, I always get a kick. I sort of collect joy quotes, you know, and so when I got to that part, I said, overjoyed. So tell us about that. Tell us about why there's a balloon named overjoyed.
Well, you know, I always love the idea of the sky is the limit. I've always loved hot air balloons. I myself have taken a hot air balloon ride and experienced the magic of it. And to me, just rising to new heights and realizing your potential and not putting any limitations on yourself, it's an overjoyed, it's an experience. It's just something that's all-encompassing, and I really wanted that for my character. And I felt that her entire summer with Jake Colby, learning about herself, falling in love with herself, you can't help but feel overjoyed for her and for herself. So that's where that idea came from.
Well, it's perfect. It is absolutely perfect. And I do love the idea of the balloon and what it represents so much more. Also that freedom and that rising to new heights. I thought it was terrific. And you've risen to fantastic heights with this book because your writing is so good.
Thank you.
You know, rarely do I go anymore, do I have to look up words in the dictionary, or do I have to, you know, go to a thesaurus. I'm pretty good wordsmith. But with you, I said, well, I have to go and find if there's another word for brilliant. Because
Thank you so much. That means so much to me. As a debut author, this encouragement is invaluable. Thank you so much for your kind words.
Well, you know, I said to myself, this is just too good to be true. I want to read a little bit of one of your paragraphs just to show people. It's a simple paragraph. It's a simple sentence, but you write it so well. The awkwardly plump attorney, sporting a salt and pepper wizard's beard, rose from his chair and extended a fleshy palm. Now that is a great sentence. It's just perfect. It's you can see this guy, and then of course you build that character into somebody very interesting.
Yeah, Mr. Baxter. He actually was named after my dog. My dog Baxter. Between us, but he just represents all the unknowns and everyone, your fears and your insecurities, and that's how I felt when I was depicting his character. I wanted someone to come across as someone intimidating and bringing out all your kind of like your imperfections, and that's who Mr. Baxter was.
Well, you just describe him so perfectly. His chubby arms jiggle, and there's nothing jolly about him or magical. And it's just so well done. And I thought to myself, "Woo! This author is having fun here, and just making a name for herself."
Oh, I love having that control over words. I love putting poetic words together. I spend so much of my time analyzing every sentence and trying to think, what would my readers want to read? What would be pleasing to them? And it's almost like writing poetry, even though it's not a poem. And that's so important to me, to create feeling and to create images, so they're not just reading a sentence, but they're actually getting engrossed in what's happening.
And this is, you've accomplished it. It is so terrific. You know, I always get so thrilled when I have an author who's just starting, and I see now, you know, I've been doing this program for over 8 years, and I've seen the authors come back. You know, they start writing, and sometimes I had one author, the one I was speaking to just before you, when she wrote her first book, it was planned to be her only book. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to her, and when I read her book, I said, well, of course you're going to be coming back because you're just too good. I mean, once you find, you know, I talk about the joy on paper. Once you find that joy on paper, you're not going to give it up.
Mm-hmm.
So I know there are a lot more books in you.
I hope so. I really do. And I hope I can just keep touching people's lives, because that's why I wrote this book. I want to be a beacon of hope for others, especially women. I want them to realize their potential and to realize that it's all about second chances and new beginnings, and that, you know, as I said before, the sky is the limit, and that I want them to have hope and believe in themselves and to find joy. And that's why I started writing.
Well, you certainly have done that, and I love that you talk about finding joy. I love that this is, you know, a romance.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a lot of books that are called romance, okay? But so many of them are very, very bitter romances. There's a lot of bitterness in them and a lot of bad language, which you know, when I want a romance, I want something like this. I want something that makes me feel good, that gives me hope for everybody, that there's goodness in this world. And tell a little bit about why, you know, why she gets this offer to stay in a house. Tell us about her aunt.
Oh, the grandmother?
Yeah, the grandmother.
Well,
she had
a really strange relationship. She really didn't know her grandmother. She didn't really even know anyone in her family. And I don't want to give away too much because that's a big part of the plot. But as the reader will learn the important role that grandmother actually did play in her life, perhaps not up front but behind the scenes, and the importance of forgiveness. And the importance of letting go of grudges, and that how important and how fragile relationships are. And that's what Miranda and her grandma, even though they didn't have a relationship, they actually did. And it's a lesson to all of us that time is precious, life is fragile, and to maybe it's time to let go and to forgive and to find the goodness that comes out of something, as opposed to looking for the flaws.
That's an excellent point, because did you come out with this during the pandemic, the idea for the book?
No. This has been, this has been years in the making, probably about 7 years or so. But I never had the confidence to move forward with it, and I always wondered whether it was good enough. You know, all debut authors go through that doubt, who will want to read it? And it wasn't until I met some prayer warriors and cheerleaders who instilled life into my dreams that I said, you know what, why not me? If I can't write this book and be true to my characters unless I take a dose of my own medicine and believe in myself. And I don't want to be a hypocrite. I want to, whatever I'm able to convey on paper, I need to practice that in my life. And that's why this book is being born, because I want ladies, I want women to read it and to feel empowered and to believe in themselves.
A wonderful point, because, you know, so many people do have this, they've drifted away from their families, or they don't know anything about their families, and then you get to a point where, like during the pandemic, people realized, well, you know, life is short. It could be short. So why am I not doing something with it? And why hold these grudges against people for 30, 40 years and look at them in a new light? And, you know, I just thought there were just so many things in this book. But, of course, one of the wonderful things, that it's your spirit, because you yourself have done some marvelous work. So I wanted you to take a few minutes to tell us about who you are, because...
Well, first and foremost, I'm a mom, and my family means everything to me. I married my high school sweetheart. We've been married 27 years, and I have 3 grown children. And beyond that, I have always just wanted to make the world a better place. So as young as being a child, I was always looking for opportunities to give back and to show kindness and to do all types of clothing drives and food drives, and I would write to the ladies at the nursing home who didn't have family, and I would help take exams for the blind students at college, and I just always looked for opportunities to to give back and to show kindness. And one of the organizations that I joined over 20 years ago, I became a volunteer wish granter for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And that holds a very special place in my heart. I love working with these beautiful children who are medically fragile and working with the families who are also going through such difficult storms in their life. And I like to bring hope and joy and help to make that wish come true for the family and to show the parents, let the parents have a day of happiness and to see their child smile. So that's really where my heart is, and I'm the last person to turn my cheek on anyone in need. It's just who I am. It's in my genes.
Well, I mean, you're in this world of people who are really involved in giving. You're well known because of your work in Make-A-Wish. And it's really, it's such wonderful work that you've done. And it comes through, I think the spirit also comes through in your book.
Thank you, because that was very important to me that it did, that those lessons are in there to share with others. Because we can all make a difference, Patsy. Every one of us can make a difference.
Well, I think what you've done is brilliant, really, as I really do, because I get a lot of books, and every once in a while I get sort of one that just stops me in my tracks, and I say, thank you, just thank you for writing this book and touching my heart. And I want other people to get this book and feel that same sort of magic that you've managed to capture in your writing. Now,
thank you.
As you said, you've had this idea for a while. So, how did the words come to you? When you first sat down and started writing, what was the process for you?
I wrote this book during a season of change in my life. I had just lost my grandmother, and the very next day, my career came to an end when the company I worked for 14 years closed its doors. So in a weekend, I planned a funeral and dismantling of my career, and it was tough, but I needed to find a new forum that I could still impact and influence and inspire others. And I always loved writing. I always loved putting words together. And I just sat down and I said, you know what, I'm just going to just sit down and see what comes to mind. So I guess you can say I'm not a plotter, I'm a pantser. I know the authors use that phrase. So I'm a pantser. I sit down and I just kind of right by the seat of my pants and I just see where the story takes me. And it was just all about putting beautiful words together. I knew I had ideas in my mind. I wanted it to involve the girl next door. I knew I wanted it to involve family because that's so important to me. And I wanted it to be a clean, wholesome romance. My daughters were teenagers at the time. I didn't want curse words. I wanted it to be something that you could read or your child could read and not blush. And I'm a Hallmark lover. I love the purity of Hallmark and the warm and fuzzies. And I'm a romance at heart. So everything just really came together in the story. And I went back several times. And of course, I rewrote it many, many times. But I kept working at it until it was something I was proud of, and I was ready to release it to the world.
Well, you should be proud of it. And speaking of Hallmark, they should pick this book up.
Oh, I would absolutely love that.
But
dreams do come true. I know that. But
yes.
I'm hoping.
I mean, this is the perfect book. I could write the script for it tomorrow because I think it's just a great book, a great story. There are so many great, wonderful scenes in here, in addition to the one with the balloons and of her arriving and finding the house and all of this and all the things that she goes through. So did you have some experience in renovating houses and fixing things up?
Yeah, somewhat, sure. I do. But for me, it was all about the story starts off kind of... I guess you'd call it a little heavy, a little somber, you know, in the attorney's office, and then you graduate into and being introduced to the bungalow, the grandmother's home, and it's, you know, it needs so much of a makeover, and there's so many things that just don't represent who Miranda, or maybe it does represent who Miranda is, but not who she wants to be. And you see this, like, how it just, the transformation, and how it just brings the whole story into the light. So the dilapidated cottage represents all the clutter in her life, and all the baggage that she has, and everything that she needs to kind of go through piecemeal to become who she's meant to be.
Oh, it's a beautiful story. It is a beautiful story, and really Hallmark should pick it up because it's a great story. It'd make a wonderful, wonderful Hallmark program. And who knows, because I've had some authors here who their books were picked up and they turned into Hallmark movies. So we will keep our fingers crossed and say some prayers. And hope that you'll be back and you can come and tell me when you get a movie deal, okay?
Oh, I'd be delighted. Thank you so much.
Well, you know what, it's also inspired me. I think I've been thinking maybe you know, I come from northern Michigan, and there is this old farm that someone abandoned. Not one of my relatives, but my relatives still have their farms. But there's this old farm that's abandoned. I'm thinking of buying it. I think I'm going to buy it. It wouldn't cost too much. And then I'm going to leave it, or I'm going to pretend I'm not actually going to go and drop dead. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to get this a lawyer who will give it, and I say that to some millennial, and I'm going to give this old farm to a millennial, and send this millennial who will be chosen will only have to spend 1 month there, because I don't think you have to drive your tractor to the top of a hill to get cell reception.
Wow!
And there is no Wi-Fi. I mean, we up there we just call it "Why try?" because because if you do get it, it's only going to last for a few minutes. So I want to see a millennial live for a month in that farm and survive it.
Oh, that's great. I love that.
Wouldn't that be great?
What a novel idea. Yeah. That would be fantastic.
Yeah. My goodness, I just ripped you off. No, yours is better.
It sounds like a reality TV show, Patsy.
You know that I could do. Now, wouldn't that be fun?
Yes, it would be.
Oh, I'd love to. And maybe I'll do that. I'll take 10 millennials up there, put them in this house, and see if they can survive a month without Wi-Fi or cell phones. I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Well, you're just fantastic, and your work for Make-A-Wish is, you know, what you've done over the years for that and helping people is wonderful. And now that you found this joy on paper that you give to others, who now are the readers, will find joy on paper when they read your book. I think that it's just, I was really, well, perchance. Are you writing another book, perchance?
I actually am. I actually am, and it's along the same lines. It's not a sequel, but it is about finding your voice again and about rediscovering who you are, who life meant for you to be, and it's another romance.
Good.
So hopefully that will be coming out sooner than 8 years, like it took me to write 100 Days Till Tomorrow.
Yeah, but the first one always takes a long time.
Yes, it sure does. It sure does.
But now that you found it, and now that you found your voice in words, because you are really good, I love anybody who uses perchance, whilst, or shan't. They will always get on my program. Just, those are three of the words that I love. But I knew the minute I read that paragraph, I said to myself, she's going to be back. She's going to. And I know you will. So as soon as you have a release date, Linda, people have to look you up as L.S. Case, right?
L.S. Case, yes. There's actually another Linda Case who's an author, and that's why I had to kind of be a little bit more creative with my name, because I didn't want to step on her toes, and even though she writes about dogs and dog training. But I figured, you know what, I wanted a new identity. I figured this is a new chance for not Linda Case, but L.S. Case, and that's why I went with that name.
Well, we'll remember it. I'm going to remind people of L.S. Case. Because you've written a wonderful book called 100 Days Till Tomorrow. Of course, if I had picked your name, it would have been Brilliant Case, and then that'd been really easy to find.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope that your listeners enjoyed this and that maybe they'll follow along with me on social media.
I hope so. Now, your website is what?
It's lscasenovelist.com.
Okay.
lscasenovelist.com.
And social media, where the...
Just L.S. Case Novelist. It's on Instagram and Facebook. It's both L.S. Case Novelist.
Okay, that's... I haven't had too many people who use the word novelist, but you are definitely a novelist.
I'm different.
Yes.
I'm different.
You're not a plain old writer. You're not a plain old author. You are
a novelist.
Well, you
know what, Patsy? I did that because I figured if I put that in there, it forces me to write more than one book. I have to live up to that name.
Well, I think that was a brilliant idea because you're brilliant. And L.S. Case, novelist, I am so happy that you are enjoying paper today. You are really a wonderful person, a wonderful human being, and it comes across in your book. And you make me overjoyed.
Thank you. This was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well... What a great book. Now, that's a romance. If you're going to give me a romance, please don't give me dirty words, because I'm not going to read it. I'm not going to read it. I'm telling you right now. If you want to write a romance, it has to be sweet. I like it. And this is a really good one. So, perchance, if you are writing, if you are writing a romance, let me know. I do look forward to nice ones. And L.S. Case, novelist, has done a fantastic job. Well, okay, I will have to have another time that I will have Gretchen Charrington on so we can talk more. But it is a reminder of what Gretchen did. You know, when you have interesting people in your family, in your background, maybe not recent relatives, great-grandfathers, great-granduncles, aunts, whatever, if anybody's been interesting in your past, do some source, researching and discover more about them and come out with a book because it's fun. It's something... One of the things Gretchen does at the beginning of a book, she said, for all of her past relatives, her current relatives, and her future relatives. That's who she dedicates her book to. And you don't know, you know, who your future relatives are going to be, but maybe 100 years down the line, you have a relative who says, "Woo, look at this, look at my great-great whatever," and it makes an impact, so... Definitely think of doing a memoir. Because what do I always tell you? One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perchance a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you try. So get busy and start writing like Carol J. Perry does, 1,000 words every day. Haunted Haven Mysteries and what, you know, she just writes away. And a big thank you to Big Ed for doing that lovely Father's Day promo. We'll play that again next week. Everybody, and Ed saluted me, and I had to salute him today because he is the star of promos. Okay, bye-bye now.